Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Jim, just simply wonderful.
Excellent.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. We're waiting for Bill to call in, but we wanted to get started. Welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 68. Tonight's show is, the COVID virus, COVID-19 virus part two. We're going to talk about solutions. Now, this is there's a ton of information. And Han and I were talking about this before the show started, that more than likely we're not going to get through all of it tonight in one show. And that's okay. We'll do the second show next week. That will be a further continuation of what we're talking about. But the whole idea of last week's show, we talked about dealing with, you know, what is the problem? So go back, listen to that thing. You'll get a better understanding of where we're at. I don't want to spend too much time going over that, other than we're talking about the issues that this virus has brought to light, and specifically how it deals with, you know, your dental office and what's going to happen to it today, what's going to happen to it in the future. So the solution, and there's a bunch of them. It's Han and I like to call it the, you know, multi-layer prong approach, whatever you want to call it. But there's multiple aspects to be able to deal with and position yourself. More than likely, you're like most of the dental offices across the country. You're shut down. You're probably doing emergency cases to, you know, keep your patients out of the hospital. But other than that, there's no hygiene. There's no normal procedures. There's no restoration. There's nothing going on because of what this virus has done. It's so contagious, and it's so potentially unknown. So Han, you and I and Bill have done a ton of research on all the aspects, and we've come up with this approach. Let's kind of draw a circle on a piece of paper and divide it into seven or eight wedges, like little pieces of pizza. I use pizza because it's one of my favorite foods. And you number them, and that's what we're going to do. We're just going to go around, and you're going to fill those in, and at the end of the two shows, you're going to have yourself a little roadmap. And you know, that's kind of what is a beginning outline of what we're talking about. But the solution, you know, indoor air is really what we're talking about, your issue. Indoor air, defined by the EPA, is five times more polluted than outside air. So we had a discussion last week. We talked about how air changes were so important. But indoor air is made up of three things. It's made up of about 35% particulates. So that's that dust and dirt and dander and junk like that that floats around. And most likely that is able to be covered by normal filtration, which is what you should have on your equipment right now. Then there's 31% chemicals. That's those VOCs and those odors. And some of those are potentially toxic. And then lastly, the most important thing is what we're dealing with is the 34% biological. Biological is mold, bacterias, allergens, and viruses. And some of these things, including the current virus we're dealing with right now, are down to almost 1 micron in size. So you can't see them with the naked eye. You only can see them with a microscope. We're talking about tiny, tiny, tiny little particles that have to be dealt with. So, you know, our multi-prong approach, we're kind of just going to jump right into it. Han, is there anything you want to add into the initial discussion before we jump into our prongs?
Jim, is the size is 0.1 micron, right? Not 1 micron.
Did I get that wrong? I think you're right, 0.1 micron. It's tiny.
Yeah, very tiny. Okay. Let me just kind of elaborate on the three classification of stuff that's in the air, in the indoor air quality is mainly that is the industry terminology that you hear about all the time. The biological, I think, is they all are concerned, you know, that have effects on our health. The VOC, the chemical, that is the stuff that are usually found in the stuff that the building are made of. Okay, the paint, the carpet, the glue, all the man-made stuff that makes up your building. And then biological, naturally, it blows into the building, brought into the building, or it grows inside the building for one reason or another. So we're gonna cover this. This is gonna be fun and interesting. Jim?
It's gonna be interesting, and obviously this is serious stuff because you're sitting there trying to figure out what to do. And I guess I want to just add to one thing too is, and we've talked about this as well. We don't want you to be in a position where you feel like you have to do something right now. Just because you got to do something and you do the wrong thing. But at the same time, you got to do something. So it may be like the idea that, well, okay, today you're going to do one or two of these items, or you're going to do something that maybe is not permanent, understanding that it's not permanent and that you have to later change it and fix it into something else. But let's just jump right into it. Prong number one. So on your little piece of paper, put down a one in one of the pie shapes and call prong number one. And it's real simple. Put down the letters UV-C. And that stands for ultraviolet light, specifically a certain kind of ultraviolet light. Now, ultraviolet light, this particular piece of pie, is kind of broken up into two or three different systems. But it's all basically the same kind of discussion. It's the idea that ultraviolet light destroys the cell walls of the virus or the bacteria or the mold. It goes right down to the molecular level and destroys the cell DNA of the pathogen and doesn't allow it to replicate. So just like ultraviolet light is extremely dangerous to the human skin or to our eyes, it's also very dangerous to the pathogen. So in the right wavelength, which ultraviolet light is made up of a whole bunch of wavelengths, you get the right wavelength, you will be able to destroy all those nasty things like mold, viruses, bacteria, allergens. Now, there's systems out there, and there's many of them, and there's lots of them, and we're not going to spend our show going through all of them and trying to talk about the pros and the cons and which is the best and which is not the best. That's for you to work out with a professional, design professional, a group like ourselves or others might be out there to be able to help you out and do that. You know, we'll be able to work through that. But the system, prong number one approach called ultraviolet light irradiation basically destroys the cell walls of that. I want to break that up into two pieces. We're talking about a system that's integrated into the work of your furnace or your air conditioner. And that is as simple as installing the right sized, properly located UV lights within your ductwork. It's on 24 hours a day. Your fan on your furnace or your air conditioner runs constantly. See, that's a change in procedure. I mean, a lot of times you might not have your fan running constantly on your furnace or your air conditioner. Now you will, because what your plan is to move all the air within your facility through your ductwork and get it past this light. Now, you may be familiar with this system. It's used a lot in water filtration, for example. If you have a reverse osmosis system with a UV light on it, it's the same principle. There's a UV light, the water runs by it, it irradiates any bacteria within and kill the bacteria within your water. So it's very common and is very, very effective. Now, there are several different methods of where you can place this UV light, and there's pros and cons to that. We really don't want to spend or waste anybody's time and focus here on going through all that. You know, call us, talk with us, send us emails, get us on the phone if you have a particular one that you're looking at or not looking at, or you would like to learn more. You can always get a hold of us, can't you, Hon?
Yep, you can.
I mean,
we'll tell you.
Yeah, and you know, we'll work through that with you. But the airborne is of course the most the simplest kind of solution, in the sense that you don't have to worry about it. It's doing its own thing, and you just have to check and make sure that the light is there and working constantly, and it will help. Now, Hon, I think you said it best. There's no one major or silver bullet to solve this problem, is there?
No, there's not. You have to analyze every, you know, your every building is different. You know, it's, you know, the layout of the building is different. The size, volume, material, all that stuff. So everything has to be analyzed on an individual basis to come up with a solution that will work, and also work for your budget and stuff like that. But there is not a, you know, a silver bullet that will solve everything. Jim?
You know, this is crazy, Hon. Bill just texted me and said, all the circuits are busy. Twice I've heard that. I've heard that twice today. My dad tried to call out of Florida. He said all circuits are busy. Obviously, there's too many people that are at home, and they're all on their phones. But he is going to keep trying. But yeah.
Okay.
So you were saying, you're right. You know, there's no magic bullet. There's no one bullet that's going to slay this dragon. So it's multiple layers and levels to be able to ensure that. The ultimate goal is to give you a clean facility that's good for your patients, obviously, but as well for your staff and for yourself. So you don't have an environment where people that come into your building effectively are exposed to these nasty pathogens and potentially, you know, end up getting sick. So the second part of the ultraviolet light method is what we call surface disinfection. Now, this one's a little more complicated, but at the same time, it's really, really easy to implement. And it really involves, this is technology, Hon, that came from the surgical suites, correct?
Yeah, mainly, yes, hospital surgical suite, yes.
Right. And so the surgical suites, you know, we're taking all this information and we're integrating it into the dental world that's never been in the dental world because there wasn't a need for it. Well, now, you know, that's changed. That's changed a lot. But, you know, surface disinfection is real simple. You have to place the appropriate amount of UV lights. Typically, they're one of two places. They're either placed on the ceiling or they're in a mobile and or standalone kind of configuration that's set within the room. These
like
lights,
a cart.
Like a cart, exactly. It would be like a cart. Well, you even brought up an example of what a robot in a hotel down in Texas that runs
right.
around. Yeah, that's a little high tech for, but I could see it for a hotel because, you know, you've got hundreds and hundreds of rooms to do. So this little robot just goes from room to room to room and fries all the germs. But yeah, for your 5 or 6 operatory, maybe the robot isn't the right solution. But without a doubt, placing surface-mounted UV lights up on the ceiling or, like you say, a cart gives you the ability to disinfect the surface within the room. We've already talked about UV light disinfecting the air particles, you know, and we all know where that comes from. You know, everything from, you know, people breathing, coughing, sneezing, every time you turn on a drill, you got all this stuff that just instantly goes airborne. And so surface disinfection, very simple, places appropriate amount of light wattage up on the ceiling. It has its own switch, usually has a timer. It has disconnects specifically because it's for unoccupied space. We do not want to be in the space when it's in there lit up. Now, Han, you brought up an interesting thought, and it had to do with how does the light get into the cracks and crevices or under the countertop, that kind of stuff. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I think the UV light bounces.
It does.
So, you know, when it bounces off of the surface, refract. So at true exposure, we don't know the duration of exposure, but to like a time delay type of application, it can clean area that are not, you know, that are not surface that you see, but under the surface. I think it's rather interesting. I thought, gosh, you know, if you have crevices, how does that clean it? And it was explained that, yeah, it bounces. So we should be able to clean most of the space, whether it's visible or not. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a matter of duration. It's a matter of time. Obviously, the light that's directly hitting the countertop, for example, is going to be, you know, quickly destroy the pathogen on that surface. Let's see. I'm trying to call Bill. I believe I have Bill. Hold on.
Hello.
Bill, did I get you?
Bill. Yeah, you got me.
Excellent.
Welcome,
all right.
Hey. So just on a side note, it looks like that our – never mind. I didn't see a phone number on the thing you sent out today, huh?
Or
maybe I missed it.
To call in, Bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We got you now. We're live on the air, so
thankfully
we got you.
Okay, so we'll fix that difficulty later. We'll work on
that. Yeah,
without
a doubt. That we'll work on that later. We were just talking about one of the prongs we were at, the UV light destroying the nasty things on the countertops and the surfaces. So we were talking about that you know, UV light hits the surface, it's going to hit the surface on a countertop first. But once it bounces throughout the room over a period of time, it eventually gets into the cracks and the crevices. It eventually gets underneath the countertops, all those things, so that the surface, all the surfaces within your space are, in fact, sterilized. It may take a couple hours. There will be a review and a recommendation based upon how many lamps, how big the lamps are, all that kind of stuff. But the most important part is you have to be able to isolate your rooms, or at least isolate your area. Or the, if you can't do that, you're going to have to isolate your whole building, your space, so that no one can get into your office while these lights are on, because they do damage, you know, human skin, and they damage our eyes. So it's very important to that. And we're talking about being able to sterilize surfaces down to 99.9%, getting rid of the microbial contaminants to that level. So that's, you know, that's pretty clean. Wouldn't you say, Bill?
Oh, yeah, it's very clean. Although I was talking to one of our other experts who we'll consult some other time, and said actually it's a huge difference between 99.9 and 99.99, which I did not realize.
Wow.
And I wish I could explain it, but it's kind of a big difference. So 99.99 is even bigger, but unfortunately I'll have to tune in again, because we'll have him on one of the shows and he will review that with us. But he wasn't available tonight. So
yeah, we started our show out saying,
Jim.
Yeah, we started our show out, Bill, by saying we probably won't get through all of these prongs tonight, because there's so much information to go over. But you know, catch us next week as well, and hopefully we'll be able to include Mark with that part of the discussion.
Right, right. But I think Jim, you've done a great job of reviewing UV, and I know we have some more information about it, and I think it's definitely something that we're going to want to look at. And you're absolutely
right. It's not the solution for everybody. Yeah, it definitely is not
the solution for
everybody.
No, but you don't want the cleaning person to be coming in and cleaning your office when your lights are coming on. So,
no.
You know, so there are definitely uses for it.
Yeah, that poor person is going to have to get hazard pay, because they're going to have to go in with an irradiation suit, because that's effectively
right.
What's happening is you're radiating everything and destroying the bacteria down at the molecular level.
Was there anything we needed?
Go ahead. No, I say, Han, was there anything that I missed in the UV light for right now?
No, I think you got two, but there's one more that you have that deal with coil disinfectant. But I think you got most of everything that we need to talk about surface disinfecting using the UV lighting, Jim.
Yeah, this is UV light. So let's jump into real quickly prong number two, which has to do with HVAC filtration systems.
Hey, Does everybody know what a prong is? Because I don't know what a prong
is.
Yeah,
we talked about the prongs. We took a pizza. We took a big round circle, cut it into seven slices of pizza, and each one of those is a prong. So it's like a slice.
Okay, gotcha. Like a slice.
Yeah. So it's a slice number two or prong number two. So, you know, take your piece of paper that you've made your circle on, and number two, put down HVAC filtration systems. Well, those are those filters that are in your equipment. Nine times out of ten, you've never even seen them. You have maintenance people or your equipment guys go out there and replace them.
They take care of it.
Yeah, hopefully they do. And, you know, those things are replaceable. But they only filter so much. A normal filter only filters out those dust particles, the dander, the hair, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then you get down to the more restrictive filters to get it to like what's called a MERV 13. And there is just a whole science around the idea of filtration. But MERV has to do with the filtration level. The smaller the particle, the larger the MERV level. And HEPA filters, I'm sure you've heard the word or terminology HEPA. HEPA filters are typically in the MERV 15 to 20 level. and the super HEPA filters are in the 20 range, and those filters can get all the way down to the point of getting out the smallest microns that we're talking about. But they're extremely dense. They're extremely difficult to have within your filtration system because they're so restrictive. You have to have equipment that is so sized, it's so large, the blowers are so large to be able to push this air through these kind of restrictive filters that a lot of times it's not practical. It just really isn't practical.
But didn't
have,
you say that one of the units is going to have to be as big as like one of the operatories almost or something like that?
Yes, yes. Yeah, in your addition, the engineer said that if we wanted to put in a super filtration system, we would have to go from your little closet, which is 4x4, to an 8x10. 8x10. That's an operatory.
Yes, that's an operatory.
To be able
to
put in a furnace or an air conditioning handler that would be able to have a super HEPA filter in it, to be able to filter out the virus. So we don't, you know, we're not saying it's not the solution, because it might be in your particular case, but there's the idea of, do you have the space available? Do you have the equipment? Is the equipment able? An example is, take a super restrictive filter. You could buy some of these things at Home Depot or Lowe's and put it in your furnace at your house.
Right.
You'll notice the difference. There will be no air coming through your registers, guaranteed, unless your system is designed for that. And that's what happens. That's a prime example of what happens. So to be able to filter out by itself the pathogens, it's not a practical solution. It might be that you filter out some of the particles and you let your UV light or other systems take care of the other particles, kind of that layering on effect, Han, that you were talking about.
Yep. Hey, Jim, mainly because of the commercial equipment, most of the time you have outdoor or rooftop equipment. So the first thing that usually they, when they take the when they suck in the outdoor air to feed the equipment, there is a filter that filter out the larger airborne particles before it gets into the system. But usually you're talking about the on the downstream of the system is when the filter when it filter out the impurities within the room. Right? This is like your return air duct.
Exactly. Because remember, we typically take the air within the building and recirculate it over and over and over again, because you've already heated it or you've cooled it, and you don't want to just throw it away and bring in air from outside, because all of a sudden your utility bills quadruple. You're going to spend a whole lot more money on electricity for air conditioning, or you're going to spend a lot more money on gas for heating, and it becomes impractical. Now, a lot of times you can put in 100% fresh air. You can design a system that has 100% fresh air, and you're not reusing the air within your building. That's one way of solving this problem, but that's very expensive to maintain. From a utility standpoint, it's a very expensive system because it costs you a lot of money on a monthly basis. And there's better ways of solving this problem. Well, let's
what is it in the air balancing system, Jim? Like, I've got that box in my basement, even near my house.
Yeah, that's a heat and air that's a transfer system. So effectively, there are some technologies out there that allow the air to the conditioned air to be transferred with outside air, and whatever you have, let's say you have cold air in your house and you want to transfer that cold air to warm air that came in from outside. You're in the summertime. It's like a radiator in reverse, and it basically flips the conditioning from the inside air to the outside air, and then sends the outside air into your building. Those systems work. Commercially, some equipment have them available, and they can be put into your HVAC system as an option, but they won't allow you to do 100%.
So the bottom line is they're a good augment,
but they can't be 100%.
Got it. So if we're going to retrofit the furnace you have in place, based on all your research that you've done here, are you available to upgrade your filtration system so it doesn't cut your airflow and the thing won't work? And would it be wise to put some kind of UV system in the vent somewhere to where the air would pass through a UV lighting system inside the furnace venting system?
Yes. Yes, okay. On both of those. And that's actually the third prong.
Oh, I'm missing it. Well, I saw replacement, and that's what I was looking at.
Yeah, we're on number three.
Three is replacing the system. What I was looking at was taking the one I have and just upgrading the filter and then going into leaving the main unit alone and then
The problem is you can't actually replace the filter on your existing system because nine times out of ten, it wasn't designed to be able to have that kind of filter in it.
Oh, yeah. I know, I understand that. I was just wondering, so you could possibly change your filters more often and use some type of UV system if you didn't want to replace all the equipment, that would be better than what you have, like what I have in my office today.
Right. It's always better. It's always better to replace your filters every, but don't misunderstand. Just because you're replacing your filter, that filter is only getting the dust and the dirt.
Oh, I know. But what if you,
it's not,
what
getting
if you
the,
UV...
it's not getting the pathogens.
So what if
it
you
doesn't
did
kill.
A UV light? A UV light in the airflow system somewhere that would kill pathogens.
That's the better solution. Yeah, that's
okay,
a much better solution.
The other thing I wanted to ask was as far as cleaning out the vents, is that something you'd want to do periodically,
definitely,
like cleaning your vent system? Okay.
Definitely. And that falls under prong number seven.
Okay.
I
didn't flip the page over. Oh, there it is. Okay. I'm sorry, guys. So go ahead, Jim.
That's my part of the maintenance.
That's why I'm a dentist, guys. Remember, that's why I'm the dentist and not the smart guy who figures this stuff out.
Well, actually, Bill, it's very important to have you as part of this because we're talking to dentists and they need to understand what your questions are, just like their questions are, because they've got to make a decision. You know, everybody's shut down. And so what do you do now? What do you get ready for?
Three,
how are you going to reopen, you know?
Well, three is a big-time deal. That's a big-time deal.
Yeah. So problem number three, write down on your piece of paper, HVAC replacement. Now, that's probably the most expensive of all of these solutions. We haven't talked about costs up to this point because costs are relative. It's all based upon your particular building. Do you rent? Do you own? Are you going to be there for another 10 years? Or are you out of there next week? You know, it's all relative in that sense. But HVAC replacement.
I can't remember the last estimate we had because we have three of those big units on the roof of our building. And I know, does $20,000 to $25,000 a unit sound right? Or was it 12? I can't remember.
Those are about 5 tons a piece, so you're probably looking at 10 to 15,000.
Okay, that's what it was. It was 15 per unit then.
Yeah.
And that varies
where you're at. You know, if you're in Chicago, it's one price. If you're here in northwestern Ohio, it's a different price. Yeah. And but being able to replace your system, you know, now might be the time. Like, you know,
well, especially if you're
building,
end of the
using
life,
you as the guinea pig. You're the guinea pig. So, you know, your building is what, 16 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. And those units are about at their lifespan. It might be something in the very near future that we look at that it's time to replace those units. Now, if you go to replace them, we'll upgrade. Then it's time to upgrade. Then it's time to put the super filtration system into it it's time to make sure that you've got the UV light in the ductwork,
right,
which more than likely we can do tomorrow. I mean, that could be done right now. And
right,
you know, that's a better solution. Get that done right now. Get that done tomorrow. And it stays there. You don't have to replace it when you replace your unit.
Oh, yeah.
But
like what I could see right away is getting all the it'd be a good time to clean out the whole venting system and probably install that.
Yeah. Yeah. You replace the necessary things. Ron?
Right.
Jim, the UV light that are placed into the ductwork, what have your research told you in terms of the durations of changing the bulb?
It depends on the light that you buy. Now, that's
okay.
Another thing. We're giving you valuable information here, guys and ladies. Those bulbs, if you buy the right bulb, you can get 2 years out of them. And if you put them in the right place within your system, you don't have to worry about cleaning them. That's another thing. You got to keep the bulbs clean. If the bulbs aren't clean, they don't work. And if they don't work, your pathogens are getting by. So, but you know, the bulbs typically 1 to 2 years. They if anybody says they got a bulb that's old that lasts longer than 2 years, you know, I'd like to see it. I'd want to see the proof on it, but more than likely it doesn't exist. But so HVAC replacement is literally the replacement of your unit, upgrade it to be able to cover all the aspects that you want it to have, including high filtration. But that's a very expensive solution, and it may not work for you because, Han, you put it best. They could be in a rental space. How are you going to get your landlord to replace the HVAC unit, right?
It's hard enough for them just to give you an HVAC unit.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. And a lot of these places have triple net leases where sometimes you're paying for it, and depending on your rental agreement. So there's all kinds of different ways to do it. I would be reluctant to. I would think the bulb placement wouldn't be a terribly expensive thing, and the cleaning the vents out wouldn't be terribly expensive. But yeah, a new unit, unless it need. Now, if the landlord's responsible and he's got to have you a working system, then you may be able to get them to pay for a standard system that you may want to upgrade if you have a lease that's going to go out like six,
right,
seven, eight, 9 years. So there's a bunch of things to think about.
Yeah, here's another thing too, Bill, for the bulbs. You could take those with you. They're equipment. They're just like your chair. You can take that with you. It's not a permanent solution to your HVAC. You know, it's not like, okay, you're rebuilding the ductwork. You don't take the ductwork with you when you leave. But you can take the lights with you. That's nice to know if you're in a rental, you know, or a lease and you decide to move. You can take them out and take them with you and reinstall them in your next place. So, Han, the next one is the one that you've spent so much time working on. It's called the standalone filtration system. So, guys and ladies, on prong number four, your fourth slice of the pie, write down standalone filtration systems. And I'm going to let Han talk about that because he's the expert.
Absolutely.
Okay, before I get into that, let me give you a small little tip on HVAC replacement and prong. If you are leasing the building, part of your due diligence is to have the existing HVAC equipment inspect and see how old it is. So if it's, you know, if it's at the end of its life cycle, like 15 years old, negotiate for a new one. Okay.
Right.
So
that's great, Han. Great point.
All right. Because it will be a shame that you sign the lease and then a couple years down the road you're going to spend, you know, $5,000-$8,000 to replace a piece of equipment that should have been replaced to start it with. All
right,
so prong number four, standalone filtration system. Basically, for most of us, it'll be like your air filter that you buy and you sit in the corner in your home, okay? But we're talking about your office, so it's much more higher performance. It has very specific level of filtration and things like that. It all depends on the amount of money you want to spend. So you have a few options. Most of your offices have, all of your offices have treatment room. It all depends on the way it's laid out. It depends on your budget as well, because some of this unit can get pretty pricey. Some of the strategy is to start minimally. You can put them a standalone unit within your operatory. Whether you have doors or no doors, it's almost irrelevant. It's better that it has doors, because then it it's specific to that treatment room. But most of them are pretty, a size that it can handle, a pretty decent size area. So the standalone unit, they come in small, they're smaller, so they can sit inside the room, perhaps in a corner. Some units take the air from below, some units take the air from above, but they take out the, it's filtered out the particulates in the, in the air. And it filters out the viruses and stuff like that too, okay? Because we're talking about equipment that are medical grade. And then
not to interrupt, but we're not talking about the stuff you buy at Best Buy or at Bed Bath & Beyond, okay?
It's not that kind of
filtration system.
Right. This is equipment that are specifically designed for pretty much medical facilities, okay? Because you have more stuff in medical facilities that make you sick. So, but you're right. It's not something that you go down to the local big box store and, for $50 and you throw it into the room. That is not what we're talking about, okay? So the smaller units handle small area. They come in various size. So there is a larger unit that could handle large spaces like your waiting area. Sometimes you can stand it inside your corridors. So because it's a large volume space, and those things, of course, they're like on steroids. It's a lot more expensive, but it filter out a much larger unit. Some of the units we looked at can handle 2,500 square feet. Okay, but don't take that literally. That if you have a a office that is 2,200, 2,500 or 2,800 square feet, you're gonna need just one. No, you have to analyze the entire office. The flow, the location of rooms and how the configuration of the layout, all that stuff, so that way it actually optimally perform, not just simply in theory, okay? So every office space need to be looked at, analyzed, and see what system actually will be most effective and, to handle your space. There are companies that also have units that are mobile but movable. So, of course, they come in different designs and things like that. So, do your research. We've done the research. We can help you with that and see which one would ideally fit for you. Again, it's not, your approach should be what would handle it in short term and what your budget can handle and what you can handle long term and what equipment makes sense. Okay, so,
So I'm going to break on you. So I know that we've looked at three or four different ones.
Yes.
One of them was one that I sent to you information about called Medify, just to say names. It was on another webinar I was on. I know we looked at another one. It begins with A. I can't remember the name of it.
All of Air.
All of Air. Okay,
yes.
And then, of course, we've actually looked back at one that I looked at a couple of years ago. So what do you know about those other two? Anything? Did we get any good information about those two?
Well, all the air in terms of technologies are very similar. They just some will call their HIPAA filter super, and some call it I think HIPAA 13. So it's just a matter of terminology. They all basically very similar.
Aren't they making a claim for the coronavirus?
Yes.
Are they not making a claim?
Yes, they do. Okay, I think you have to really look at their research and stuff like that.
Does it have a UV light system built into it? Is that why they're claiming that?
Okay. Yes, they do.
I didn't know what the smaller unit that we looked at. Do they have a UV light built into that one too? I didn't know.
Guys, because the 13 level will not catch the coronavirus. It's too small. The coronavirus gets through. So what destroys the coronavirus is the UV level. So these things are multi-stages. You've got multiple filters. Some of them are replaceable. Some of them are cleanable. And some of them, the very last one, is the UV.
I got to tell you, Han, I already know which one you probably like because I'm looking at the layout of my office and how they're strategically placed through the office and how they actually gave us three different options for placement. This is pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
It works pretty well.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. The only thing they missed is the staff lounge. The staff lounge in the locker room is serious. That is, you know, where all the staff is. You need to cover that, and they didn't put anything in there.
That needs to be covered. Another unit. Yeah.
Yep.
So that, I mean, this could be modified, but I think my first glance at it was like, well, pretty impressive. Actually, it's pretty impressive, and don't get us wrong, it's expensive, but I have to tell you, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
What's it expensive to be like to be shut down?
Exactly, like we are right now. Well, for instance, you guys very well know that we had a spill in our office a couple of years ago. We actually had to shut the office down for about 3 or 4 days because of the spill of this chemical, which will remain unnamed, which is not used anymore.
Yeah.
So it was awful. Whereas this probably would have cleaned it up a lot quicker. I think this is fascinating.
You know, the system doesn't just clean, you know, particulates of that. It also handle, you know, odors and stuff like that too.
It's impressive. It's impressive.
Yeah,
and they've got a pretty good track record.
Medified air is made in the United States. The other two we looked at are in Canada. One of the things that I thought was interesting, Bill, is that your accountant should be able to help you to decide which will give you the best break on your tax. Okay.
Right. And it's what you want. I did not. Did we get pricing from? We probably don't have pricing on Medify or.
Actually, the two that's out of Canada. One gave us the price and the breakdown and stuff like that. And I think they basically are in the same shape as most people around, at least in North America anyway. They all work from home now. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So they may or may not have access to their server or the information that they're accustomed to. So their response time may be a little bit lag behind.
So we may have more information next week.
I was expecting it today, but they didn't come through. So we're looking at a lot of different technologies.
Let's push that to the next show and share that when we get that information.
But I have to tell you guys that I would say their name, Surgically Clean Air, gave us a really, I thought, thorough analysis and something to look at, and we just haven't heard from the other two. Okay, I'm sorry. We only got 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, I want to jump into at least begin the next prong, slice number 5, and that's facility redesign or facility design. So, Han, I'll let you jump into that because, you know, you're our resident expert when it comes to dealing with the design of dental spaces.
Yeah, I am the building's doctor.
This is true.
So, yeah, most of my patients are sick long term.
That's right.
Well, your approach, okay, most of you have buildings, existing facility, and you figured out, okay, what can I do and how much it costs, okay? We're not going to get into cost, but what can you do? Part of the think about it. Every time they open the back door or the front door, stuff from the outside into the building. Okay, it comes in on the airstream that of human activities or Mother Nature blows it in. It depends on where you're at and location of your front door. This is, you know, I gotta pat ourselves on the back a little bit. Vestibule is one of those very first defensive elements that you can put into your building to control and minimize impurity into your building. Okay, it's not a waste of space. It is a design feature. It pays for itself for a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, I would never put a structure up, especially a main entry point, that I didn't have one of those.
Yep. Okay.
A vestibule. You got to have a vestibule. In fact, remember, we're actually putting one in with our addition on that one piece.
We are.
Actually, we're putting them on both of the doors.
The back door has a new vestibule just for that reason.
Right.
Yep. And people often say, you know, I live in a temperate environment. You know, I'm in Florida, I'm in Texas, wherever. It's like, we don't really have bad weather. It's not the weather. Okay. It's the crap that it blows into your building. So, you know, it can be as small as about 25, 30 square feet. Okay. It pays for itself. So can you look at your existing building office and install one? Well, you hire smart people. They can. All right.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. The doctor.
Okay.
Call the doctor.
Yeah,
call
the doctor. Okay, so the buzzword right now is social distance. We can't do anything about that, but we can make recommendations of how to execute and rearrange, reformat your facility so that you can at least accommodate that somehow. Okay, I've seen shielding is another feature that I've seen already installed in a shopping facility, post office, more likely dentist office. Okay, for a long time ago, you walk up into your doctor's office, your dentist's office, you knock on the window, you say, "I'm here." And they say, "Please take a seat, have a cup of coffee." Well, that looked like the cycle had made its way back. So shielding would probably be a new, you can do that pretty quickly, pretty economically on a short term, or you can have a design so that it becomes a permanent fixture. Okay.
Yeah, and so I'll jump in there real quick, hon. So you and I both looked at short-term fixes, which those are actually going to be arriving in my office in the next week or so. So we'll actually, in fact, who knows, maybe by next Tuesday, I'll have some hands-on information for you. But if I was building a building, I would design it in today. I would design that shielding in. So it's like Kroger's is putting the sneeze guards in. So it would be a system like the good old days when you went to the bank teller and there was a piece of glass and you slid your money into a slot or underneath the thing. So I think those days are all coming back, and then organizing social distancing as people come to the desk. So I'm sorry, hon, but that's we'll have more information. But I know that the doctor can design you a reception area and a checkout area that will build in the social distancing into your office.
We can look at different strategy to address that issue. Okay, but I guess the shielding is a nice word, but mainly its main purpose is the sneeze guard. Okay.
Right. And your workflow rework too, huh? That I know you know.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. How you interact with your patients and the puppy and stuff like that gonna drastically change. And then another thing is, I think if you are designing a brand new office or a brand new building, this particular strategy would be best work is compartmentalizing your office. We call it zoning, okay? I was talking to Jim earlier before we came on the air. Is that for some reason decades ago, some designer or even architect take liberty to start to mix everything. You know, there's not a defined work environment or there's not a defined zone. The rule of thumb when you design a home, for instance, is that you got your entertainment area, you have your family area, you have your rest area. Okay, those are the three zones. Okay. And you take that and you apply it to your dental office if you got your public space. You've got your clinical space and you have your staff space. So when you start to mix them all together, it's very, very difficult to compartmentalize them. Why is it important? Well, it's important in ways you corral the traffic through there. It's important when you look at designing a strategy for your HVAC equipment. So compartmentalize or zoning those area, whether mechanically or physically by doors and things like that. That is another strategy that we want to look at. If your existing building, can it be done? Well, we can take a look at that. Okay. Some of this stuff can be done right away, and some of this stuff would require more planning and more investment. Okay.
Yeah, you may have time to do that if we're shut down as long as we may be shut down. So if you're thinking you want to do this, you need to contact the doctor as soon as possible. Go to the website, contact the doctor, and get started right away.
Han, before we have to sign off, throw out the idea of the floor. Flooring is an important one, and I think that, you know, we can at least start the discussion about it, but flooring is important.
Yes, actually, when we're looking at the UV lighting, one of the very first thing that we thought about is how the heck does this technology that works so well, how is it going to affect the existing material, the finishing, the finishes, And so we start to look at different things. I myself have never been a big fan of grout lines. And seams, okay? I'm not germophobic. It's just that I look at things at a more of a molecular level. If you have floor that looks great because that's the trend and put together by a bunch of a bunch of panels and tiles and stuff like that, everywhere you
interior
have a
design,
seam,
hon. Come on, just throw it out there. Interior design, make it look pretty.
Yeah, because they look pretty, okay? But beyond the pretty. There are floor material, and some of us might call it linoleum, but they're not. The classification of resilient flooring. They come in large sheets. They put it in. Now we look at hospital grade, okay, commercial hospital grade, where the seam can be welded together. They use a heating device. They weld them together. The seam, they call it welding because it's like a little rod of the same material. You can see where the two pieces come together, but it's a closed seam, all right? So when you look at your facility, look beyond the prettiness because some of this material will give you the same aesthetic, but it's much, much more easier to clean. It's more resilient. And you don't have all these little crevices that, all these spores and germs and fungus and stuff like that reside in, Okay, so the flooring is going to be a big, I think, a big major change in your office. Carpet probably going to go away. I don't know of any carpet manufacturer that claimed that it will fight virus and stuff like that. All right?
No, I mean, there's antibacterial resistant, but it's definitely not going to handle this.
No, this stuff gets stuck in it. It just makes you feel good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Guys,
we got to close. It's 9 o'clock
already. We're going to save that for I guess it would be three now.
Three.
For next Tuesday. Yep. But, you know, we're partially through pie slice number five, prong five. And, Bill, you had mentioned it, and obviously, you know, it is available for those that might be asking that question. Give us a call, get a hold of myself or Han, and we will do something what's called an evaluation assessment with recommendations. So effectively, very quickly, we can evaluate your facility. We don't even have to come out there. You just send us some pictures and a floor plan, and we'll help you identify what pictures.
Tele-office designing. We can do tele-office designing.
Exactly. You know, we'll hook you up on Zoom, and you can walk around your building with your iPhone. And, you know, so it's quick and it's easy, but it's very valuable. And the best part about it is we can give you the recommendations, so at least you have some input as to what to do. So, you know, get a hold of us. We're here to help. And obviously, we're going to talk much more about a whole lot more of this stuff that we didn't get to go over today, next Tuesday. And we'll figure out a way to make sure Bill gets on the line before we start.
I'm sorry, guys. I actually saw emergency patients today, and I got in the house, and my wife looked and said, if dinner gets cold and you don't eat it, you're dead. So it was one of those deals. So the correct answer is yes, dear. I said I will get with these guys as close to 8 o'clock as I can. And then unfortunately, the number I called wouldn't let me in. So we had a few.
Well, it's because the circuits are busy.
Technical
difficulties. Yeah, the circuits are busy. But you know, obviously, thanks for listening to us. Hopefully, it's been
helpful. Talk to you guys next week.
We're here. Talk to you. Like you say, we're here. We're available. We look forward to next week. Han, I'll let you finish it out.
All right. We blew by another hour. Hope I'll give you a lot of useful information. Meanwhile, stay safe, stay healthy. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.